patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
So whether you like Buck Martinez or not, there is something very endearing about him. I'm obviously a big Buck Martinez fan. The amount he knows about the Toronto Blue Jays, his baseball knowledge is fantastic, and he's got that ties to the Jays throughout history.
This offseason, when we had suggested or questioned would he be a level of excellence candidate, mm-hmm. and I felt like that was a no-brainer that he was. Yeah. I was amazed to see any pushback at all. We got significant pushback, but
there are Buck detractors. But I just have he brings this romance to Toronto Blue Jays baseball. And it could just be that I have watched Buck Martinez call games since I was a kid. So it could just be that. And, you know, the new fan base, the young ones are just like, who is this old man and why is he constantly doddering on? Which is something Buck does. Again, Buckisms. And he had one last night that, man, I love it so much. And I want you and I to put some effort into making this a thing. Because he was talking about Nate Pearson in the eighth inning, and Nate had just hit 101 on the radar gun. And Buck just casually drops, when you blow the cheese, you got to use it. And Adam, the confidence in which he said this, like that's a saying? Like when you blow the cheese is a saying? And it is obviously not, but I think blowing cheese is fantastic, man. I want to... Nate Pearson out there blowing cheese.
Now, is it like a block of cheddar and he's blowing on it like a fife? Or is it like an aerosol can and he's blowing it out, right?
See, that's how I pictured it, is an aerosol
rocket can. Rocket man. He's holding two cans of aerosol cheese down by his ankles and he's blasting off blowing cheese.
Exactly. You get it. I don't remember the show. My Secret Identity. Did you ever watch that as a kid? He had those aerosol cans, yep. And he could fly around with them. Yeah, like that, but with cheese.
I remember Bart Simpson tried cheese. That with two cans of spray paint, and he just ended up painting his ankles blue and didn't go anywhere.
Nate Pearson out there blowing cheese.
Blowing cheese.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. We are wearing our walk-off merch. Look at this. Hey, honestly, we got our merch in a few days ago. This is the first time we're kind of bringing it up on the show. I know we've had about 10 orders already through Patreon. If you're Patreon, obviously you get the heads up first. So it's just the way it goes. Sorry, everybody, but we do have limited quantities, but finally, Adam's wearing the Bad Taco shirt. We've been talking about bad tacos. Of course, that's what we call injuries here on the walk-off. So the inside joke is finally available on a shirt. And I'm actually surprised with the walk-off sweaters. They're quite comfy. So there's our little plug for that. You're going to have the walk-off website taking you to the shop. In the show notes, feel free to check that out. And we've got boxes here in Calgary in my spare room. So this isn't you order and it comes from China. We are actually stuffing it into envelopes and sending it out. So you should get it pretty quick. Okay. Another couple things to tease here. Jeremy Taggart, of course, he was the drummer for Our Lady Peace during their heyday, 1993 to 2014. He has the comedy duo of Taggart and Torrance, Jonathan Torrance. Of course, everyone knows him from Trailer Park Boys, and he's just a Canadian celebrity darling, if you will, a very funny dude. So Jeremy Taggart coming on Long Toss on Sunday. He's a huge Blue Jays fan, so we're going to talk some Blue Jays with him. Of course, we have our regulars, Garth and Jen, coming on. And fingers crossed, I think Sean LaCombe, the very funny comedian based out of Edmonton.
Oh, no, that's the real get.
Yeah, isn't it, right? So we've got a heavy Long Toss.
Oh, I should have known we were having LaCombe if it's an Orioles week.
Right?
I know he's not an Orioles fan, but he's always wearing that stupid Orioles hat.
But he loves that stupid hat so much. I know, yeah. So nice. A very good long toss that, of course, runs every single Sunday, 6 to 8 Eastern, live on YouTube. Join us. And lastly, Monday, Mark Shapiro's episode. We sat down with him on Wednesday and talked for about 30 minutes with the man, the president of the Toronto Blue Jays. How the hell we wound up getting him, just two bonehead comedians here, to sit down with the president of the Blue Jays. I don't even know how it happened. I do know 8-year-old Scott, if he was told this, would tell future Scott to fuck right off, that that's not a possibility. He probably wouldn't have used that language, but, you know, just a little mind blowing. Anyways, it's very cool. We had a great conversation with him. Keep your eyes out for that on Monday. Mark Shapiro, president of the Toronto Blue Jays.
For anybody watching with their kids annoyed with Scott for dropping an F-bomb, saying this is supposed to be a child-friendly show, just keep in mind, in this scenario, it was an 8-year-old saying the F-word.
Yes. So that's so he would have been reprimanded. He would have been reprimanded and not done it again, right?
Exactly. He doesn't know what he doesn't know better. He's 8. Got him some slack. All right.
Bad parenting. That's who I blame. okay, we've got tons to talk about here. I don't particularly wish to get into it, but I feel like we're going to spend some time on the Jays and Yankees series, break that down. Three studs and a dud, our weekly segment at Adam takes the helm of there. We'll get to that. Looking ahead to the week coming up here, the O's and the Rays, more divisional rivals. Where have the home runs gone? We deep dive into that. The Blue Jays way down on home runs compared to past seasons. Dalton Varsho, so much talk about Varsho lately. I think he's been doing a good job with the Blue Jays, and he's definitely kind of filled the need they were hoping he would fill. Has he been the bat we were hoping for? Maybe not quite, but there is a lot of talk about how the Arizona Diamondbacks just ran away with this trade. So we'll break that down. And then we'll end the day on Kevin Biggio. Do we want to see him still in this lineup? I think the answer for most people is a hard no. But there was a tweet from Blake Murphy that stood out to me yesterday that made me go, oh my God, when this happens, this will be the most annoying thing ever. So I'm not going to spoil the tease there. But yeah, the what if Kevin Biggio was a name a team did come up. Let's break this down. Let's get into this Yankees and Jays series. Buddy, it wasn't pretty.
One win. We didn't get swept. One and three at home.
I think that was the hardest thing to deal with, Adam, was that this we could have been swept. It's not like the game they won in the 10th inning, they were playing good baseball. I mean, the biggest Achilles heel of this entire series was runners in scoring position because the Jays were getting guys on. But the other frustrating thing about this series is truly the Jays could have won three. Like that was the thing, right? Is that you're like, man, we only took one game from the Yankees, but also it could have been a complete flip of the script. Just the bats went cold, dude. The bats went cold. And it was really frustrating to see because the pitching gave this team a chance to win every single game. Man, here's some things that
not the Alec Manoah start.
Well, yes. Okay. we will put the Alec Manoah start aside.
All right.
That was just a straight up Yankees win. And that was a tough one to get into and to watch. But these are some numbers that just kind of blew me away. So Matt Chapman hasn't hit a home run since. Do you want to guess when the last time he hit a home run?
420, April 20th.
Good guess. April 18th. So he has not hit a home run since April 18th. This is even more mind-blowing. Just take a stab in the dark. Since that date, how many RBIs he has?
Since April 18th?
Yes. So a month.
Well, a good season would be 100 RBIs over 6 months. So that would be like 18 RBIs per month. He was having a good season. Now, obviously, he's not. It's been a month. So I'm going to put the number for I'd be happy with 15. But given the context of this conversation, I would say it's well below that. I'm going 7.
what I would give for Matt Chapman to have put up 7 RBIs in the last month, buddy. He has one run batted in since April 18th. And you look at his numbers and you realize why he won player of the month in April, because my God, man, for his numbers to still be well above 300 and still look as good as they do, and to have done literally nothing for a month. Like, that's the big thing that's been ailing these Jays, is that all of a sudden they're getting runners in scoring position and their big bad bat in the cleanup spot that was driving guys in has gone ice cold. And he's not alone. I mean, really, George Springer, Matt Chapman, Alejandro Kirk, Whit Merrifield, Santiago Espinal, Kevin Biggio, Dalton Varsho to a little bit, substantially lesser extent, but we'll throw him in there. They have been struggling, man. This is the Blue Jays OPS for these players in the month of May. Springer 611, and he leads the way. Chapman, an OPS of 517, Merrifield 516, Kirk 417. Like, this is a dude who last year in May and June, his OPS didn't drop below 1,000 the whole time. Biggio with an OPS of 411 and Espinal with 392. They are not hitting. They are not producing runs. They're not getting on base. Like, the guys who are getting on base are Bo Bichette, Vladdy, Dalton Varsho is getting on base, and then they're just being left there because no one is picking up the slack. There's no cure to this, Adam. They just got to figure it out. And there's no time, buddy. Like, there's no time to sit and sulk about this Yankees series. Like, yeah, they go right back into the meat grinder tonight facing a rival in the division that is currently 2.5 games ahead of them in the Baltimore Orioles. And then they go to the Trop for 4 games against the Rays.
It's going to be a big series, a big couple of weeks coming. We'll get to the week 8 preview in a few minutes here. Alec Manoah, talk on him for a second?
Yes.
So he got blown up this week against the Yankees. Historically, pitches well against the Yankees, which I think made it feel that much worse.
Mm-hmm.
He's now sitting at an ERA of 5.4 mm-hmm. on the season. I don't have his whip in front of me, but I think it's close to 2. Let me just have a look here. Alec Manoah's stats. His whip on the season, 1.8 at the moment.
The walks, so, hits innings pitched is a really absurd. Good. It's a really good measurement of how a guy is hitting his spots, because if he's not hitting his spots, he's going to be walking a lot of dudes and he's going to be giving up hits that he doesn't want to give up. And a 1.8 whip, like think about that. There's almost at least a 1 walk and 1 hit per inning that Alec Manoah is pitching. That's why he has a 5.4 ERA.
Last season, obviously, 3rd in Cy Young votes, all-star, as good as it gets, right? A 2.24 ERA. He had a whip of 0.992 last season. He had walks per 9 of 2.3 walks per 9. So, like, 2 walks over the course of a 9-inning game. This year, 6.4 walks per 9.
Almost
home runs per 9, almost, I guess, more than doubled again as well. Home runs per 9 last year, 0.7. Wasn't giving up home runs. This year, 1.6.
And all of these numbers make sense, Adam. Like, all of these numbers make sense for a guy who doesn't hit his spots anymore and isn't locating his pitches, right? He's pulling on his slider. He's not hitting his spots with it. His fastball is constantly rising out of the zone. He is a mess currently, and I don't know what the answer is. Obviously, if either you or I knew, we'd be working for the Blue Jays right now.
I did some homework, Scott, because last week on Long Toss, I think it was Long Toss,
mm-hmm.
I asked everybody's confidence in Alec Manoah to finish the season with an ERA under 4.5. I am skeptical of this. So I ran the numbers, and here's what it would take. So right now, Alek Manoah has an ERA of 5.4 through 9 starts. So he has like 32 starts in a season, right? I've given him 31 because that's what he did last year, 31 starts. Last year, he averaged 6 1/3 innings per start. So let's give him that. That's 139 2/3 innings over the remaining chunk of season. That's how many innings he has left to get his numbers right. What this works out to is that over the course of his next 22 starts, for him to finish the season, I did the numbers, okay? I did the numbers. For him to finish the season with a 4.5 ERA, he would need to have a 4.2 ERA in his remaining 22 starts. That feels attainable. I feel like he could ride the rest of the season and have a 4.2 ERA the rest of the way. For him to finish with an ERA under 4, he would need to have an ERA of 3.52 in his remaining 22 starts. That feels out of reach for me.
He really hasn't given hope that he's on the way to finding it. And I think that's where it's tough to believe that he can go 3.5 ERA for the rest of the year. And honestly, that's probably what I would take out of Alek Manoah, just with regular regression from last season. Like, I kind of expected him to be around a 3.5 ERA for the season. I did not expect him to be at a 5.5 ERA, but
his rookie season in 2021, in 20 starts, he had an ERA of 3.22.
Mm-hmm.
So
the big man's out of whack.
I don't know what it is.
Definitely the pitch clock has affected him. Speeding up his delivery has affected him. Getting into a rhythm in 2023 has not been something he has been successful at. So I'm not sure the answer here. We talk about this constantly. I mean, this has been the big subject for anyone talking Blue Jays over the last 6 weeks, is Alek Manoah and what is up. They're going to keep trotting him out there at least for another couple starts, in my opinion. I mean, it's tough to kind of shift him down now.
All right. Well, should we end this Jays-Yankees recap on just the temperature of the boiling water that is this rivalry?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a fun series. It is too bad for Jays fans that it didn't even out in the end. I really felt like last night's game was very winnable, and it was frustrating to see the Blue Jays not put up runs. Like, if you can't outscore the Yankees in a 3-2 game, you're going to watch it go down the way it went down. So the rivalry,
the highlight for me, it was John Schneider yelling, "Shut up, fat boy." At all.
Mm-hmm. Frat boy.
So perfect.
Frat boy. Shut up, frat right. boy.
Wink, wink. I just love that he got caught with, and that was the thing he said. He didn't say like any sort of a slur or like, you know what I mean? Like, this could have been so much more toxic of a word that came out of his mouth. And I'm just happy that it was, of all the things he said.
Of all the F words he could have used, I'm glad he didn't go to Kevin Pillars, you know, not that he used a word that should be used in professional sports, most likely, you know. I mean, there's a lot of talk of body shaming and all of that sort of stuff. And obviously, we're not here to pile on to that sort of behavior. But to see John Schneider use a word that so many Yankees fans have thrown at Blue Jays players and even been called out for is hilarious to me.
That's great.
One thing happened before we move on from this that really made me smile. So John Boy, of course, John Boy Media, one of the top baseball content creators in all of baseball, originally based around the Yankees. And of course, they have expanded, but they shit talk the Blue Jays and Bo Bichette. It's been pretty regular. They give respect. I'm not saying that John Boy isn't isn't going to give you yours when it's deserved. But definitely they're not as rosy as, let's say, Blue Jays media is about the Blue Jays. They are selling a Bo Flo shirt. And of course, Bo Bichette had that big home run yesterday. And of course, John Boy all over it, right? Bo, incredible hit. And then underneath it was a link for the shirt. And Blue Jays fans lost it. It was so funny to see so many people on Twitter quote tweeting it and being like, this is such bullshit. If you're a Jays fan and you buy from these idiots, you don't even understand what's going on. And this isn't just one or two tweets, dude. This was like so many across the Blue Jays Twitter universe. And of course, I thought I was being funny. And I quote tweeted and was like, I bought a new shirt. And very few people thought that was funny. You know, the downfall of being a stand-up comic and you're used to getting that information right away, right? Is this funny? Yeah, and the audience is like, no, or yes. And then you do it on Twitter and you're like, oh no, I've got to sit and wait for a response here. Not funny. But my favorite one of this, Adam, was friend of the show, prospect wizard, okay, Brennan Delaney out of Ottawa. Okay, he's a guru when it comes to the minor league system of the Blue Jays. He follows it very closely, but he tweeted out, his thing was so funny, man. He quote tweeted this shirt and he was like, I'm not sure if this is licensed by Major League Baseball, but if it's not, this is a problem. His tweet was like, is Major League Baseball getting their cut? love it. Good for Brandon. Love it. All right, we'll move along here. Before we move on, Adam, I do want to just say that, and this is something nobody's bringing up or talking about, and I just want us to be the first here. April 30th, okay? April 30th, Chris Bassitt sacrificed an iPad to the baseball gods. Since he smashed that iPad, and this is no joke, these are his numbers since destroying that iPad in the dugout. 27 innings pitched. He's allowed 9 hits. 9 hits. Talk about a whip. Right? 9 hits in 27 innings pitched, 0 earned runs, 7 walks, 2 wins, 1 complete game.
Pretty good.
Can we get Alek Manoah an iPad? Can he just, let's get him a couple. All right. Smash an iPad, Alek. Let's see what happens.
Just don't eat the iPad.
Don't eat the iPad. Okay. 3 studs and a dud, buddy. All yours.
3 studs and a dud. It is time for our week 7 awards. And buddy, in a week where we, wins and losses wise, probably felt disappointed. I mean, we went 4-3 against good teams. I guess you'll take that. But after sweeping the Braves and being home to the Yankees, you sure
really wanted that 5-2. Really wanted it.
So, okay. Teaser off the top. Kevin Kiermaier hit .667 with an OPS of .1881.
Out of the nine hole.
He was not our first stud of the week, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, I was surprised myself. He, Kevin Kiermaier, was not second stud of the week. Ooh. Let's get to it. Kevin Kiermaier is your number 3 stud of the week. With those numbers, also had a stolen bag, 2 walks and 1 strikeout. Biggest thing standing in his way was he played 4 of the 7 games.
Yes.
But 8 hits through 12 at bats across those 4 games. Like you said, out of the 9 hole, Kevin Kiermaier.
Putting up a season.
Loving this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So who had a more studly week than Kevin Kiermaier? Well,
the iPad smasher.
No, we're not there yet. Oh, number 2.
You're like, don't jump ahead here, Scott.
Yeah, Scott. Let's just stop with the guessing. Anyways, number 2, Danny Jansen.
Hey, Jano, walk
Danny
off.
Danny Jansen, yes. Double walk off, actually.
Double the fun.
Double the fun. 5 games for him. He hit .286. Look, if he's hitting .286 all season, those are great numbers from Danny Jansen. For one particular week, you're like, that's not that good. There's 3 guys with better batting averages than Danny Jansen. However, like you said, walk off against the Braves, and then a walk off 3-run home run against the Yankees. So, I mean, it's just, you can't ignore two walk off hits.
100%, especially after just spending the last, 5-10 minutes talking about how this team hasn't hit with runners in scoring position and what a downfall that has been. So to have a guy like Jano step up and be so clutch twice, not just once, twice. Love it. Number two.
Great. A couple honorable mentions to get here. Brandon Belt.
Yes.
Went 7-for-19 this season or this week, hit .368, OPS at .876. Brandon Belt, resurgence in May. We'll see if this is the real Brandon Belt or if this is just hitters getting hot in May. But so far, Brandon Belt hitting good. So honorable mention to him.
Love to also see it.
Honorable mention, Bo Bichette, 321 offensively with a home run. 5 RBIs for Bo Bichette in those 7 games. I think he had an error this week. If I'm not, was it, or that might have been the week before. When was his last error that he airmailed it? Is that in the Yankees series?
I think we were making the hair mail joke on Sunday.
Right. Yes. So it would have been the last week. So there you go. Anyways, that's your 3 studs for week 7. Nope.
No, you didn't get to number one.
Number one, the iPad smasher. We talked.
Yeah, I spoiled it.
You spoiled it, but it's Chris Bassitt. Look, Chris Bassitt.
I should have saved my Chris Bassitt spiel for this, right?
That's all right. Here we are, Chris Bassitt. You already read the numbers. 0 earned runs, 16 innings pitched. That is on the back of a 9 inning complete game shutout victory. If you've been following the Jays, you already know that doesn't happen very often.
First complete game shutout since 2017 when Marcus Stroman did it. 5 years between complete games. It's crazy.
Very cool. He has just been, I will not lie. I will admit, game one of the season for Chris Bassitt had me concerned.
Sure is it making me feel silly about that concern now, though.
It sure is.
Like, my God.
Every time he takes the mound, I feel like Jays have a shot to win.
Yes.
I feel as good about Chris Bassitt as I do about Kevin Gausman. So 80% of the time, he's going out there giving you 7 innings and 0-1 earned runs. I'll take that for my number 3 guy.
What I really like about Chris Bassitt, too, is what a thinker he is. You can just tell that his baseball IQ is off the charts. The amount of pitches he throws, how he never seems rattled. I mean, unless he's sacrificing an iPad to the baseball gods, he never seems rattled, right? We've seen him rattled one time, and he was very, very rattled.
What did you think of that weird diving, that grounder up the first baseline the other day?
Yeah, the tag.
I think it was Brandon Belt on first, kind of bobbled it, and then Bassitt was over there just to cover, but scooped it up and did like a weird rotating
diving
dive
tag. It was awesome. Pretty, I loved it.
Cool,
man.
To see him. I don't think of him as being an athletic guy, is the thing, right? So to see
which
him
is hilarious, because I agree. He doesn't hit you as like, oh yeah, this guy is a pure athlete. But to see him kind of do that that dive shuffle twist in the air there to get him.
Pretty good.
Love to see that kind of effort for sure.
Okay, so that is your stud number one as far as your duds go.
Oh, we have a few to choose from again this week.
Have a few to choose from. Yusei Kikuchi didn't have the best start last week. I'm not worried about him.
No.
But he is worth mentioning. On the offensive side of the ball, Alejandro Kirk, 2-for-17 this week. Good for a batting average. I mean, you talked about the OPS, .343, batting average of .118. Whit Merrifield cooled off this past week, .154 for a batting average there. I don't think, despite the entirely disappointing 2023 campaign he's putting together, it's not been a dud yet. Alek Manoah is your dud week in week 7. I
think tough to argue been, that one.
He's been kind of skating by on the he hasn't been the worst.
Mm-hmm.
He's had like some stinkers, but there's been guys who have been worse.
Would you say that his last outing was the worst of 2023? It probably was.
Context, I'm going to say yes, because again, he always pitches so well against the Yankees.
Yes.
His last time against the Yankees this season was his lone good start. So part of this decision comes from the fact that, yes, it was against the Yankees. I do have that expectation that, look, for whatever reason, he shows up to play against the Yankees, and he didn't this week. And then I think the other factor is a little bit of a lifetime achievement award, you know, when, like at the Oscars, when a guy is about to die and they're like, well, we're going to give him an Oscar because he's been such a great actor for 75 years and he's never won it. And it's an honorable thing. It's kind of the reverse of that. Scott is, he's just been so bad all season long. He just, he deserves it. He's kind of your dud by a default. I feel like he can't be having the season he's having. And for it to be May 19th and for us to say, but he's never been a dud. No, he's definitely, he's earned it. So, and I think this is, I don't know, man. I don't know what the right answer is.
Maybe, maybe
worst ERA on the team this week. It's yeah, this will kickstart him. Five earned runs,
bottoming
four
out.
Innings against the Yankees, seven walks. You had an interesting stat about, what was it? Alek Manoah, seven walks in his last start. Espinal and Biggio, what, eight walks combined all season?
Yeah. Thank you.
That about sums it up. All right, that's it for your week seven awards. Three studs, one dud.
Okay, so now we're going to get into the week that is ahead, which is more AL East division rivals, and these are big, big games. And I know we just touched on it a few minutes ago. This team does not have time to wallow and get down on the fact that they lost to the Yankees. They got to put their game faces on and go right back out there because they are facing some very, very good teams. Both teams, by the way, ahead of them in the AL East standings. The Baltimore Orioles continue to chug along. This young upstart team, I don't even think they know that they're overachieving. This is something that you kind of brought up earlier in the season when you were talking about the Orioles, because you had a little more faith in them than I did. And you're like, the one thing with this Orioles team is that they are so young and so energetic that they might not even know that they shouldn't be doing this with the starting pitching they have. And that is the one Achilles heel of this Baltimore Orioles team, is the starting pitching. Despite it, they keep winning despite it. And we're going to break down the pitching matchup here. Of course, game one tonight, we're watching Yusei Kikuchi take the mound with his 3.89 ERA. He has been good so far, facing the pseudo ace of the Baltimore Orioles and Kyle Gibson with a 4.67 ERA. He is one of their best starting pitchers. So that kind of goes to show you where Baltimore is in the starting pitching rankings of things. How do you feel going into this series? I feel like this is a winnable series, especially with Kevin Gausman on the mound and Yusei Kikuchi on the mound. Alek Manoah is a question mark, but even when you look at Grayson Rodriguez in game two is taking the ball for the Orioles with a 6.57 ERA, which is higher than Alek Manoah's by a full point.
Yeah, I feel good. This feels like this is our first time matching up with the Orioles this season, right? This feels like a statement opportunity series to like slap your cocky little brother around and be like, no.
You're good, but you're not there yet, kid.
You're good, but you're not there yet. This feels sweepable to me.
I feel the same way, especially with Baltimore coming into Toronto. They just dropped 2 of 3 against the Los Angeles Angels. Baltimore scores runs. And once you get to their bullpen, it is scary good. I mean, they found Felix Bautista last year. He became this stud closer. Well, the Orioles have gone and done it again. I know I sent you, Baseball Doesn't Exist had an incredible thread on this Yennier Cano that has come out of basically nowhere to be one of the top relievers in all of baseball. He's out of Cuba. He actually put in a request at 15 to leave Cuba. Cuba said no and then banned him from playing baseball at all, to the point where he was literally being watched by members of the government. And when he would go on to a baseball field to practice, they would go and they would boot him off, even just from practicing. He did eventually manage to get to Argentina, of all places, and came up the ranks there. Even last year, he was in the minor league system of, I think it was the Kansas City Royals, and he did wind up making some starts, bullpen appearances. He lowered his arm slot even lower from where it was, and now his changeup is literally unhittable. And when I say unhittable, I mean he is throwing 86 changeups and has zero contact. Nobody has gotten a hit off this changeup. He is literally shutting games down for this Baltimore Orioles team. You want to do the damage with the starting pitching. Yep. You don't want games like we just saw in New York where they're not scoring until the bullpen comes out. Bad idea with the O's.
Yeah, if they're starting pitcher, if you suspect them of having sticky stuff, do not challenge it.
Yeah, let them go.
Let them go. Notably here, ESPN.com does their matchup predictor. And Blue Jays predicted 55% favorites in game one, 62.5% favorites in game two, and 64.5% favorites in game three. So again, if you think Dean Kramer, that is gospel, then I have bad news for you against the Rays. but we get to that when we get to the Rays.
Yeah, we'll do that right away. I do wish to just really quickly reiterate Kyle Gibson, 4.67 ERA, Grayson Rodriguez, 6.57 ERA, and Dean Kramer with a 4.94 ERA. These are not unbeatable starting pitchers, and this team better concentrate on not letting it get to the bullpen. All right, let's move on to the Tampa Bay Rays. Four-game series, and Adam, it's at the dreaded Trop.
The dreaded Trop. That's a tough place to play.
It really is. And there's some interesting things that are going to go down in this week. It may not happen against Baltimore, but probably could happen as they do go to Tampa Bay. And that is Adam Simber is back with this team. He has not been put back. He has not been taken off the IL. So he is with the team, but there's not a spot yet. So he can't pitch with them. We'll see how this unfolds. Obviously, they are going to need to demote a pitcher. Right now, it looks like Thomas Hatch is probably the most likely of the bunch in the bullpen to get that call down. But things get really messy because Mitch White is also back with the Blue Jays. Some of you might have seen him in the bull,
rehab
dugout. Wow, just completely.
Was he in the dugout this week?
Yeah, he was in the dugout last night in the Yankees, lost to the Yankees there. So okay, they are going to need to demote another pitcher, and Mitch White is out of options. Now, the broadcast did bring up that he's all of a sudden feeling some shoulder soreness again. Now, I don't know if this is just there's nowhere to put what Mitch White. And it's probably better if he feels a little sore and needs to start his rehab clock over again, because that is the way it works, right? A guy can rehab for 2 weeks, I think, is the runway, and then has to be put back on to the 40-man roster. So Mitch White definitely does need to be dealt with, but maybe there's this sore shoulder that will restart his clock. We'll see how this goes down. Another thing to keep in mind with the Tampa Bay Rays is they know their numbers. They know their analytics. And we are going to watch this Tampa Bay Rays team run when Toronto goes to town. Okay. The Jays have been abysmal at preventing base running. Third worst in Major League Baseball with 38 allowed steals. So can we expect Tampa Bay to, once they get on, be running? You damn right they can. This has been the game that the Rays have played all season long, and we're going to need to depend on Jano and Kirk to shut the door, which they have not done very well to date.
Just a quick question about Mitch White and his return. Are you a Mitch White believer?
Not yet. I'm also not a detractor. I don't think that last year was a fair representation of what Mitch White can bring to the table. I know everyone's freaking out because Nick Frazzo, the guy they traded for him, is looking really good in Double A right now for the Los Angeles Dodgers. I mean, there's guys on Twitter calling it the worst trade the Atkins regime has ever done. I don't think it's
they must not be familiar with the Dalton Varsho trade.
Yeah, exactly.
Kidding, of course.
Yes.
Where I feel are like you Mitch at? White, I feel like Mitch White could put up really good numbers in Double A. Let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with the Dodgers last season, he was kind of in that hybrid role, right? Part-time relief, but he could get some starts. His innings pitch log looks like one inning, two innings, one and a third, two and a third, and then into the starts where he's getting four and five innings pitched. Once he came to Toronto in August, everything is four and two thirds, five, six innings pitched. He was a starter when he got here.
Yeah, he was put right into the rotation.
Numbers don't titillate me.
Mm-hmm.
His numbers from the 2022 season with the Blue Jays, 10 games, eight of which were starts. He had a whip of 1.744 and an ERA of 7.74. I don't know if he deserves a spot. I guess, like, I know he's out of options, so he, like, mm-hmm. is going to have to get a start, but, or a spot in this pitching staff once he's healthy, but.
Wow. So, Adam, if you look at his rehab starts to date and the numbers he's putting up in AAA, they are not impressive. They're just under a 5 ERA. He's walking a lot of hitters. His whip doesn't look good. And it's why it caught my ear when Buck was like, but he has been experiencing some shoulder soreness, right? Where it's like, okay, maybe this guy is not ready to come back and there's no place to put him. And the best thing that can happen is the phantom injury, right? I don't know.
In order to reset that rehab clock, then he pitches once in Toronto. We send down Nate Pearson for a day and say, hey, don't unpack your bag because you're trading spots with Mitch White tomorrow. Like, is that what it
that,
is? Mitch White in a blowout or we're down five or we're up five. We put him out there and then we go, re-aggravated the injury. Let's put him back on the IL. Genuine question.
So this is where we probably need the grounds crew to swoop in and save us here and do the research for us. I'm not actually sure the process in restarting that rehab clock. I don't know if it's enough for him to just come back and not even be inserted onto the roster and then be like, my shoulder's sore, and then you redo the paperwork and away you go. I don't know if that's how it works. So please, if anyone is aware of how that works, one thing I do know is that once a guy is sent down, it's a 12-day before they can call him back up. So if they do use Nate Pearson, who has options and is one of the guys on this in this bullpen who can
be called right back up.
He can't be called right back up. He's got to put in 12 days in AAA.
Well, what are your thoughts on Nate Pearson and what he's done so far this season?
He's blowing cheese, buddy.
Blowing cheese, exactly. When you're out there blowing cheese, you got to use it.
You know what? Nate Pearson has impressed me. He hasn't been completely unhittable or lights out, but he has been solid. And I think that the experience he's gaining right now, he hasn't faced big league hitters very often in his career. He's struggled to stay on the field. So the fact that he's healthy, he's feeling good. He came out of the bullpen last night, Adam, and was hitting 99, 100 right out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, look, the numbers, he's not like giving us closer numbers, but for a like mid to low end bullpen arm, the numbers I'm fine with. Like, it's a 1.2 whip. It's an ERA of 2.7. The strikeouts per nine, I mean, 8.1. I'd like to see it be higher with a guy who's blowing cheese. But yeah, walks per nine, 3.6. It's like, I'm seeing him get into leverage situations. I'm seeing him go long, like he's pitching two innings at a time here and there. I don't feel sick to my stomach when I see him enter the game. And I, and I mean that as like the best compliment I can give anyone in any bullpen ever. Right? If I see Anthony Bass going into the game, I'm almost changing the channel.
You and me both, buddy.
But Nate Pearson, room to improve. But yeah, he's hitting triple digits. I feel happy with what Nate Pearson's doing this year.
And with the stuff Nate Pearson possesses, I think that this experience is invaluable as we get deeper into the season. And this is a dude who we could see in some very high leverage situations when it matters late in the year, which is the dream. That's what you're after with those high velo, big arm strikeout potential dudes. So yeah, keep putting them out there, keep giving them situations, keep growing that experience. And hopefully it all plays in our advantage come September.
All right, let's end on this before we move on, Scott. Record prediction. Four games, three against the Orioles, four against the Rays. What are you wanting to see out of this seven-game stretch in week eight?
Listen, Baltimore is not hot right now. They've just come out of a series against the Angels where they dropped two of three. The Tampa Bay Rays just lost two of three to the Mets and are 4-6 in their last 10. These are games where come September, we'll be looking back on this stretch, seven games versus AL East rivals. And we'll be saying, boy, oh boy, thank goodness that happened. Or dang it, sure would have been nice to have taken more there. I would love to see a 5-2 record. Obviously, that is the best case scenario, everybody. I am being biased and I am not. If it was my money, I'm not betting on that. I'll take 4-3 out of this 7-game stretch. I would sure like to see them come out of. I want to see at least a series win in against Baltimore here at home. And if they can split that 4-game series at the Trop, I am fine with that. Listen, this is not the Tampa Bay Rays team that they faced earlier, where they took 2 of 3 either. This Rays team is not near as hot, which could bode well for this Blue Jays team. The downfall, of course, the Blue Jays also not very hot right now.
Yeah, I would say my opinion on the Rays, they are overrated. They are good, but they are not as good as I think we're giving them credit for.
They're not a 110 win team.
I see week eight going very similar to week seven. Honestly, I think we sweep the Orioles and then we feel disappointed by the end of the week because we only took 1 out of 3 against the Rays. Yeah, so,
which just, yeah,
the 4-3 is what I'm going with for week eight. So there you go. Anything else to add before we move on?
No, let's get into the lack of the long ball.
Where have the home runs gone, Mr. Scott Belford? That's what you want to know.
What's interesting, Adam, is I remember talking over the off season and we kind of had decided that there were probably six guys who we didn't think all six guys would have 30 home run seasons. That is by no means ridiculous. However, we did say there were six guys that if they hit 30 home runs, we wouldn't be sitting here going, oh my God, we've never seen anything like that. Okay. And the dudes we brought up was George Springer, obviously a history of hitting home runs. He's had multiple 30 home run seasons. He's a guy that even at 33 years old, I think there's probably another 30 home run season in George Springer. His home runs are down, but Georgie has the ability to hit 30 home runs. Bo Bichette. Bo is yet to do it. I think he topped out at 29 home runs. Bo Bichette's at 9 home runs now. And I think It would be silly to bet against him hitting 30 home runs this season.
Puts him on for the one guy for 33.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I mean, how can you not think that he could hit 30 home runs? My goodness, he had 48 in 2021 and considered last year a down year with 32. Matt Chapman has hit 30 or more home runs before. Just last year, he hit 27. He's a guy who, if he did hit 30, none of us would be sitting here shocked. We just wouldn't be. Okay. Dalton Varsho had 27 home runs last year. Yes, maybe a little bit more of a question mark around his consistent power because he's only played a year and a half in the big leagues. But Dalton Varsho has power. Mm-hmm. And again, yes, we'd be all thrilled as Jays fans if he hit 30, but I don't think we would be like, oh my God, the world is upside down. Dalton Varsho hit 30 home runs. Now, the last guy, and I put a slash there where I said Jano slash Belt. Okay.
Okay.
Listen, I did not expect Danny Jansen to hit 30 home runs this year. And he's a guy I probably would have been blown away if he managed to pull it off. That said, with the kind of power we watched out of him last year playing an injury plagued season, I think he put up 15, 16 dingers last year. And played about half the games, and then Brandon Belt. So between those two, I think it's completely reasonable that we expected at least 30 home runs between the two of them. Brandon Belt, obviously back in 2021, was on pace for a 30 home run season. He had some injury problems that prevented him from doing it. This team has the potential for power is what we're getting at. But my goodness, it has not showed its head.
Hey, Danny Jansen on pace for 22 home runs.
Right? Even though he's hitting under 200, he has showed power this year. And when he gets hot, he hits them in bunches.
And that's home runs in general for anybody, right?
Yeah.
They come in bunches. So where have all the home runs gone? You asked me to pull up home runs to date last year versus this year. So we're at the 44 game mark in the 2023 season. Care to take a guess how many home runs we've hit? Here, let me give you this as a hint. The Tampa Bay Rays have 87 home runs. They lead the way.
50?
47. 47 home runs through 44 games.
So almost half of the leader in baseball.
That's good for 18th.
Wow.
Overall in Major League Baseball. Last season, through 44 games, the Yankees led the way with 63. So the Rays, to put in perspective, really mashing the ball this year with 87 so far. This year, Yankees lead the way with 63. Toronto Blue Jays last year were in 10th. Guess how many home runs they had through 44 games. This year, remember, 47 through 44 games. This year, this year, 47 home runs through 44 games. Last year,
my God, Adam, is this one of those things where numbers just shove it right back in my face? What is it, 47 home runs last year, too, or something ridiculous?
It's 48. 48 home runs. So it's down. It's down by one home run.
Yeah. Well, that is surprising.
Yeah.
I think it was that the Rays have so many this year. I just, you know,
we feel so far back.
Yeah.
Well, and like it is the thing. We were 10th last year at this point, mm-hmm. and this year we are almost a bottom 10 team. We are.
So home runs are up, but the Jays are not.
The Mariners are 21st and they have two home runs less than us. So we are two home runs away from being a bottom 10 team.
A bottom third runs. Team, yeah.
As far as runs scored goes, last season versus this season. Last season through 44 games, Blue Jays 164 runs scored. This season, Blue Jays 204 runs scored. So offense up significantly.
Boy, oh boy, Blue Jays fans are going to hate hearing this because I'm hating hearing this. I really was like, oh, there's so much room for improvement. And then you read the numbers and I'm like, wait, we're better than last year?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to look at it on a player by player basis, but maybe last year we had it was more top heavy. Did it feel like maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
I'd have to look at those numbers, but yeah, it's spread out. We're getting home runs from, I guess, everyone, maybe like.
Maybe it is just a more even.
We have 12 players with home runs this season. I don't know what that means.
So this is interesting, Adam. When you look at Baseball Savant's Statcast Park Factors, it actually ranks Roger.
What is Park Factors?
Basically, what it's doing is it's ranking the offense at every park and kind of ranking the hitter friendliness of the park. Now, this obviously shifts from year to year, not because the parks change, but just because the offense and the numbers at each park changes. And this really blew me away when I was looking at it, because interestingly enough, every AL East ballpark, a division filled with parks, no one for being hitter friendly, right? Everyone always talks about the AL East, very hitter friendly parks. It's why we see so much offense there. So every AL East park outside of Boston, ranks below average this season for the offense produced. And Rogers Center ranked 26th. This will even out. I think we are going to see a lot more offense out of these AL East ballparks as the season goes on. But buddy, to know that the rhetoric and the stereotype is that these are bandboxes a lot of times when it comes to these parks, and to not see it, it's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So my understanding of park factors, and I preface this by saying I own the fact that I'm a bozo. My bozo-ness is on full display whenever we're talking about advanced metrics. But my understanding as far as park factors goes is it is a measurement of it's calculated based on players who have played in a given park versus their numbers away from that park. So they have to have played in Toronto and out of Toronto. Right. So I'm just thinking, does this necessarily prove that with that the Blue Jays renovations is
no,
it doesn't necessarily prove anything. Look, we started the season mostly on the road. Mm-hmm. We also started this season. I mean, we talked Matt Chapman, for example. What did he hit? 575. In April or whatever.
He was hitting 500 for the first 2 weeks of the season. Right? Yeah.
And almost exclusively on the road. And now he's cold. And now we're playing in Toronto. Yes. So like, is this a park factor or is this a coincidence that
everyone's our guys were hot time
while we were on the road and they're also cold at home? Or are they cold because they're at home and the park is factoring, right? Like it's
and this is a bit of a chicken or the egg point, thing. Adam. Honestly, you're making such a good point because there is in statistics a term called clustering. And basically what it is that it's more of an anomaly than it is numbers that you should take in a small sample size and be like, hey, look at this. There's proof, because that's not necessarily the case. And I think that that's what's happening here is just like you said, right? The guys have all got we went through the OPS of half the guys on the team since they came home to Toronto for this homestand. Not pretty. So the fact that the entire lineup is cold at the same time at home, yeah, that's going to affect these numbers. And I think that's a big reason as to why Rogers Center, a place where we know is a hitter-friendly park, ranks 26th in baseball currently. And like I said, that will even out.
I also wonder, let me just quickly pull this up. I was just wondering how much of that park factor is Chris Bassitt single-handedly responsible for.
It's a great point.
I mean, it's based on only 9 games, so the extremes do skew more than they will over the course of a larger sample. But in nine games,
so you're telling me if you don't allow a run and only give up two hits in nine innings, that's going to mess with the average?
Well, it's going to skew the park factor at home for sure. And then when you also consider his worst start of the year was on the road, right, where he gave up nine earned runs to St. Louis in three and a third innings. Yeah, you go all of a sudden, Chris Bassitt's home road splits look ridiculous. So, I mean, that's one of those clusters or whatever you want to call it that is skewing the numbers there substantially, I would imagine. So there you go.
So there you go. The home runs aren't really down.
Just freaking Tampa Bay has an absurd amount. And
will that also catch up to them? And that's the thing, right? Home runs come in bunches. We just talked about that. I don't think that Tampa Bay, they are currently on pace to break the record for home runs in a season. I don't think it's going to happen. But also, this is coming from a fan from an AL East rival, and I'm just hoping it doesn't. Okay, buddy, let's move on to the next topic here. I know we're getting long in the tooth, so we should probably start the wrap up here. I do want to talk Dalton Varsho because it's hard to make a big trade in an off season and not constantly look at how the other guys are doing and judge the trade at every step of the way. Varsho had a really hot start to May. I know it was very exciting for Jays fans thinking that he had kind of found his footing. He was putting up power, hit a couple dingers in Boston and in Pittsburgh. And then he's went ice cold with everybody else. It's a bummer. The last 2 days haven't done any favors with Vladdy missing time too. So that kind of thrust a struggling Varsho into the three hole and kind of exposed him more, and the struggles continued. Let's take a look at Varsho's numbers for the season, because that's what everyone's kind of losing their mind about. And it's mostly the batting average that has people worried.
Okay. So his numbers for the season, he is hitting .217 on the season with 6 home runs, 16 RBI. OPS plus of 87, so he's below average as far as the OPS goes. An OPS of 672. Now, just
not,
I will say,
great numbers.
Despite these bad numbers, if you're a believer in WAR, that's wind chill adjusted rating. He has a WAR of 1, so defensive still a stud.
This is where the panic comes in with the fan base. Because there was, there was a comment from, I think it was Warlu. Warlu is a pretty steady watcher here. So a tip of the hat to Warlu, a member of the grounds crew here. And Warlu knows his stuff. Okay. We don't always agree on every take, but that's baseball, right? Every fan's allowed their own vision. And I know, and I'm paraphrasing here, but Warlu's comment was from, I think it was from Monday's show. Maybe it doesn't matter. I think it was actually Wednesday's show when we had Ben Schulman on and we were talking about Mark Shapiro and that trade and how he kind of got into details with us about it and that he had brought up, you know, you want a win-win trade. It's good. And Warlu's comment was basically a win-win trade. How could anyone possibly call it that? Everyone should be talking about what a huge hose job the Jays got on this trade, more or less. Again, paraphrasing, so my apologies, Warlu, if I'm not nailing your take here. But basically, he was saying Arizona has already won this trade. Why is nobody talking about it? And we'll get into Lourdes's numbers here, because if you look at Lourdes Gurriel's number right now, okay, a wins above replacement, the WAR of 1.5. So he's got a 0.5 wins above replacement higher than Dalton Varsho, and he wasn't even the main piece of this trade. Listen, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has a wins above replacement total in his entire big league career of 9. 1.5 is normally what he gets per season, and he's at that in 5 weeks. Why? Because Lourdes Gurriel Jr., he's the streakiest dude. Like, have we already forgotten this, Jays fans? When Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is hot, he has the ability to carry a team, and not every player that can be said for when they're hot.
Literally, I'm pretty sure last season had stretches where he went hitless for weeks at a time, and then also hit multiple grand slams in a week.
Adam, he is burning hot right now. He's got 145 at bats. He's got 45 hits. He's got 45 hits, 7 home runs. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. hit 5 home runs all of last season. He's showing way more power, batting average of 310. I just want to state, because I do disagree with Warlew, despite the fact he's a very intelligent baseball mind, okay? I do want to give Warlew credit here. I disagree with the take of it's already a lost trade, because we are 5 weeks into a baseball season currently, and to judge a trade that has players with 4 and 6 years of control solely based off, you know, 5 or 6 weeks of baseball, it just seems crazy to me. I'm not putting his take down, and he might be right in the end, but I do believe that Varsho has added things to this team that they desperately needed. I think the defensive shore up in the outfield is something that you need as a contending team. Remember, Arizona isn't going after a World Series right now. Are they building towards it? Yes. Do they have an incredible young core that could be something big that baseball's talking about down the road? Of course they do. They look so freaking good, and especially with the addition of Gabriel Moreno, who is going to pan out, in my opinion. But Varsho also has 4 more years of control. We just watched what Matt Chapman has done to start the season. I know Chappie's ice cold right now, but that's irrelevant. What I'm saying is that guys seem to settle in that second year. Okay, don't forget Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is a free agent at the end of the year too.
Just and there will that. Yep.
There are 100%, Adam, will be moments in this Arizona Diamondback seasons where Diamondback fans are literally pulling their hair out about Lourdes Gurriel Jr.'s bad swing decisions. Recency bias, let's not fall for it here, gang. Okay? And I do think it's far too early to truly judge a winner and loser of this trade. And you know what? It's not even really fair to judge numbers on numbers, because this move wasn't made in a vacuum. I don't think that we would have Kevin Kiermaier roaming center field if Lourdes Gurriel Jr. had stayed. Okay, I could be wrong, but
few things to consider here. First of all, this question just popped into my head. Maybe we'll save this for long toss to really get into, but a fun competition to watch this offseason is who gets a bigger contract, Lourdes or Teoscar?
Yeah.
Eh? Teoscar's older. He's shown he's Silver Slugger.
Mm-hmm.
Lourdes, hot. I mean, he could put together, I think he's a career 300 guy, but with the power he's showing this year, I could see a team making a run at Lourdes, thinking he's the answer.
And listen, anyways. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., he's not young, everybody. He turns 30 this season.
Well, his brother, Yuli Gurriel, mm-hmm. late bloomer.
Yes.
So, I mean, that might factor into a front office's decision as they go, hey, his brother was also a guy who was better after 30. Anyways. I don't want to spend too much time speculating on that, but it's just a fun thing to think about who gets a bigger payday, because I wouldn't have guessed last season that it would have even been a consideration. But
My biggest problem with judging this trade already is that I like how Dalton Varsho fits into this lineup, his numbers aside. You know, I know that he hasn't provided the offense that we were kind of hoping for so far, although he is showing power. He's got 6 home runs.
Exactly what I expected from Dalton.
Yeah, me too. Sure. Like he's
a low average guy that has some pop, you know, like a Danny Jansen type of bat, and a superstar defensively.
Mm-hmm. And that's what he's provided. I mean, let's face it. He has definitely made some catches out there in center and left that Lourdes in a million years wouldn't make.
Correct.
But
okay, well, the other aspect to this, and you're right, like, it's, you can't even say it's a win, because what happens next season when Gurriel leaves Arizona, and then the Blue Jays have three more years of Varsho doing great versus 1 year of Gurriel for the Diamondbacks. So
And we're not forgetting Moreno, by the way, everybody.
We're going to get to that. Yes, we are going to get to that. Yeah, the only way you can even call any trade, you can call it decisively this early is like if Dalton Varsho retired.
Yeah.
Or had a career ending bad taco. That's the only way you can say, okay, well, they're going to get everything and this guy is no longer in baseball. That's the only way you can really calibrate that. As far as Gabriel Moreno, let's talk his numbers because they look really good.
Yes, they do.
They look really good, especially considering what our catchers have been doing offensively. So Gabriel Moreno, 321 batting average.
He's not showing a lot of power, but he is sure spraying the ball all over the field, and you're going to take that out of your catcher's position. Another thing about Gabriel Moreno that maybe isn't getting enough attention is what a cannon of an arm he has. And I know that we did bring up the fact that the Blue Jays currently rank third last in baseball for holding runners. And having a guy like Moreno sure would be nice. Now, the truth is, Kirky and Jano, over their career, are a lot closer to the middle of Major League Baseball than they are the back end. And I think that that will kind of even itself out. Listen, our catchers have struggled so far this season, not just at the plate. Go ahead. Sorry, buddy.
They do both also have three errors each, three errors for Danny, three errors for Kirk, one error for Gabriel Moreno. I know that's not the be all end all when measuring defensive prowess, but it is an easy one to look at and go, well, that's not so good. Because look, I wanted to keep Gabriel Moreno. But he's also the most valuable guy any other teams wanted, right?
Yes.
We've been over this. We beat this horse to death.
Yes.
I just want to say, if we didn't trade Gabriel Moreno, if we didn't trade any catcher, Gabriel Moreno is not hitting 321 for the Blue Jays this year because he's got four.
Because he's
games.
Not getting.
He's not got getting 12 the... at bats. And yes. You don't have to look too far. I mean, let's look at Santiago Espinal's numbers. Last year was an all-star playing every day as a second baseman. Last year hit 267. Those numbers were even better in the first half, but this season hitting 171 because he's not getting the playing time. And that's the thing with Gabriel Moreno is like, he's a superstar, but I still wouldn't want him catching this pitching staff 30 out of 40 games to start the season.
There's enough of a track record on Danny Jansen as a game caller too, that I don't think for a team that was, and this was one thing that we, again, we're talking like beating a dead horse. We've talked about this so much, but for a championship team, right? A team with their sights set on the World Series as the Toronto Blue Jays have, to go with a rookie catcher as your go-to game caller, it's unheard of. It's unheard of. The closest is Will Smith in LA, and he had 3 years of experience going into that World Series, and they had Austin Barnes backing up with 10 years of experience. Okay. And that's the least experience on a World Series winning team ever. Well, not ever, but I combed over 20 years worth of stats, and that was the one that stood out. Gabriel Moreno, he could be an all-star down the road, and I hope he is. I just think to judge this trade so quickly, it's not giving a fair shake. Listen, good for Lourdes Gurriel Jr. for having a hot start. Okay. Again, playing time. Would Lourdes even be getting the kinds of at-bats if he was still with this team? Or would he be on the bench like Nathan Lucas?
That's how I feel is. And again, that's where it's the definition of a win-win is.
Adam, honest answer.
No.
If this team still had Gabriel Moreno and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. instead of Dalton Varsho, do you think they're a better team?
Well, if you believe in wins above replacement, then I suppose, yeah, you would say the numbers would say yes. That would be an extra win and a half for the Blue Jays. No, I don't.
It's just not how baseball works, right? You can't just take the numbers and plug it into another team and think that that's exactly how it would play out. There are circumstances around this team that would have prevented Gabriel Moreno from having the at-bats he needed to do what he's doing. Kevin Kiermaier probably wouldn't be in the outfield. It would be Dalton Varsho in Varsho, when we talked to Shapiro, that was the one thing he brought up, right? If they didn't add Lourdes, the trade wasn't happening.
I'm happy with the trade. I don't know.
I am too. Like I just don't think that this team is worse because of Dalton Varsho. I just don't. But would love to hear from the grounds crew. Warlew, thank you very much. I know this isn't a mailbag thing or anything like that, but it's a valid comment and a valid question. And you still probably disagree with what we're saying, and that's fine. That's baseball. That's fandom. I just want to wait longer, and I'm fairly happy with what Varsho has given so far. I would like to see a little more production out of his bat, but I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, this is where he's going to be. And Varsho definitely looks better in the 5-hole or the 6-hole than in the 3-hole. And that's just waiting for Vladdy to come back.
Yeah, I guess for me, the conversation just comes down to this. I grew up my whole life watching Blue Jays where a World Series was never a realistic option. Never a realistic outcome, right? It was maybe if the stars align and blah, 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 right? Like, you know, we could go on a Phillies type run or something, right?
Yeah.
The Cinderella story. This is competitive baseball all season long, and it's not World Series or bust, but like, I feel like we have as good a shot as any contender at a World Series. Do we need some bounces to go our way when it counts? Yeah, of course. But I mean, I'd put our starting pitchers up against anybody else's. Our bullpen needs work, but so does every bullpen in baseball outside of the Orioles. And the hitters are good, man. Defensively, we're good. We're running. We're stealing a lot. It's a fun team to watch. There's going to be heartbreaks along the way. And that's sports. That's entertainment for you.
Outside of the Alek Manoah start against the Yankees, think how close this series was. And they didn't score runs. And that is going to be playoff baseball. That's what you need to be able to do. You need to be able to win a 1-0 game in the 10th.
There you go.
Okay, let's wrap it up on Kevin Biggio. We know that this has been a long one. Thank you very much to the grounds crew for watching. We appreciate all of you. Hit that like button. Feel free to reach out to us, by the way, if you want to be involved in the Discord. We can send you a link for that at Walk Off Podcast on Twitter, The Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. Kevin Biggio, he has been abysmal. The only one worse currently is the other guy playing second base, Santiago Espinal.
Can we start calling him instead of Kevin Biggio, Cav Abysmal?
Cav Abysmal?
It's been bad.
It's been bad. And I'm not sure what the answer is with Kevin. I'm kind of done with this Biggio experiment.
Yeah.
I like the guy.
I've been a Cavabismal apologist for years now. And I just I'm having a hard time defending him with a straight face.
Yeah, it's true. He's just he just hasn't had it, because I know that we were joking about the Alek Manoah allowed 7 walks, and Espinal and Biggio have a combined 8. You know, like, that was the one thing that everyone clamored, myself included, over Biggio, is that he took his walks. He had a high on base percentage, and that's just not the case. So if his one big pro is no longer a pro, I just don't know why he's on this team. There is a funny tweet, though, that made me laugh, because I think Biggio is getting to the end of his rope. We'll see how this all plays out. There may be a trade with him involved in it at some point. Maybe that's one of the reasons why the Jays are kind of hanging on to him, is that, you know, they don't want to DFA him when there's, even if there's a minuscule amount of of value to another team. You want to try and get that out of them. Mm-hmm. But Blake Murphy, friend of the show here, of course, he's getting back on to Jays Talk Plus. So his Blue Jays talk show is coming back next week. I know that I was messaging with him on Twitter, and he was saying that once the Leafs are out, to hit him up and he'll come do some shows with us. So right. I'll be sure to get on that. But Blake Murphy tweeted, so less than Jays, Zoobs, friend of the show, he came on and did Long Toss with us a couple weeks ago, but the Blue Jays podcast, they do great show, by the way. Check out Less Than Jays. They had their show yesterday and they were asking for topics. So Blake Murphy tweeted at him and he's like, what position will Kevin Biggio be primarily playing when he hits 25 home runs for the Rays next year? Which I don't know why that struck such a chord with me, Adam, but right away I was like, oh dear God, Kevin Biggio is the perfect Tampa Bay Ray and they will make us pay. Like, I don't think there's anything. The Jays have given him all the rope you could possibly want to give a player. I'm not saying that it's like we need to give Kevin Biggio more playing time, but he is that prototypical Tampa Bay Rays guy that can play all over the field. You just feel like they're going to find a way to Rubik's Cube the value out of him that we're all going to be like, how did we not think of this? Right. So, yeah, funny tweet from Blake Murphy. Kevin Biggio, hopefully, though, isn't seeing much time on the field.
Okay, here's one thing with Kevin Biggio, too. His best season that he's put together was the COVID season.
Mm-hmm.
59 games in 2020. He had 41 walks. That's his best on-base percentage of his career. It was good his rookie season, .364. In 2020, his best one, .375, 41 walks. That puts him on pace for 112 walks, which in the last 5 years would have made him a top two or top three in all of baseball for walks. And a top 25 player for on-base percentage all of those seasons. Mm-hmm. That's the ceiling, but it's also like, what do we say with every time we look back at a guy's numbers, whether we're debating trades or considering a free agent signing or how much is this guy going to get paid this offseason? We look back through their numbers, and when we get to that 2022 season, we almost dismiss it, right? Oh, he led the league in home runs. Oh, he led the league in this or that. But it's like, it was easy to hit 400 for 60 games. Guys get hot for 2 months all the time.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm kind of like with Kevin Biggio, even the best possible outcome, like the best seasons that we're pointing to for him, was a 60 game stretch. He had a really good walk rate for 2 months, one time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been bad since then. Like, I can't keep pointing to a season that in almost every other instance, I'm saying, yeah, but it was the COVID season and those numbers don't really count. So I have to reckon with that on Kevin Biggio and go, yeah, the best case scenario that we keep pointing to and go, but what if he finds it again? Is a season that doesn't count when we're looking at every other player, in my opinion. I don't know.
There you have it, Grounds Crew. The biggest Biggio apologist that you've ever seen over the last 4 years. We've finally had it. Yeah, he did it. He turned us. He flipped us against him.
But hey, he's a lefty bat, so there you go.
Hey.
Whatever. All right.
All right, my friend. Should we call it here?
Call it here.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Again, check out the merch. Both Adam and I sporting the shirts right now. You can do so at thewalkoff.ca and go to the shop there. Shipping is free. Thanks so much for everybody who has hit the like button or subscribed. We really appreciate it. All the best, everyone. Take care of yourselves.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers.
Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.